Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to our Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and this is 2018, second episode. But what's happened? We've had some changes. We've decided to make a bit of a house cleaning. Out with the mark. I mean, out with the old, in with the new. So, for those of you who are fans of our Doof Doof man, Mark Keane, you'll be disappointed to know that basically his role at Microsoft is keeping him very busy at the moment. So he has basically no time that he can afford to spend with us for the time being. And again, we hope to get him back shortly to give us some deep dive stuff into Azure. But for the foreseeable future, Mark, again, is a very, very busy man. So again, we'll let him focus on that because that's what pays the bills for him. So in lieu of that, what I've done is I've asked a new co-host to come on board. And I'd like to introduce him to you, Brenton Johnson. Welcome.
G'day, Robert. I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. All right. Well, considering that we have an audience that's used to Captain Doof Doof usually diving deep into Azure, and I think you're probably a little bit different when it comes to that sort of background, why don't you take a moment and just give our listeners a bit of an idea of who you are, what you do, and basically where you've come from.
So I'm a business consultant. I was having a bit of a laugh before when you said that out with the old, in with the new, because I'm only 29 years old, so I'm quite young when it comes to this industry. I've noticed a lot of people in the industry have been in it for 15, 20 years. They've had to transform and adapt. They've had to move into the cloud and go through all that pain and challenge, and we're a born in the cloud company. So We're a marketing company. We're very fond of what Google does with profit-driven marketing and the way the internet was going and all of that sort of stuff. And early Google Apps user before Office 365 was even a thing. Just always been in the cloud. Never really understood on-premises because I wasn't really around, you know. So it is kind of interesting coming from that standpoint. Like, we have a very user-focused view on the way we work, so it's not a very big, deep technical focus. I'm not overly technical, not particularly compared to Mark, for example, but I take far more of a 50,000-foot view. Let's have a look at how does it impact the user on the everyday. That's what's really interesting to me.
Okay, so I suppose you run your own business, so that's again makes you a bit more like me than Mark was. Mark did have a business on the side, but his focus obviously now is to be a technical specialist with Microsoft. Again, a difference here is born in the cloud, so you don't do a lot of on-prem stuff, which is, I suppose, becoming slowly more the norm. Again, I think we're seeing more and more customers looking to go that way. So I suppose, as a background, sort of why did you pick technology? Were you always that inquisitive kid, or caught the bug early? I mean, why technology? Why not go into something else like digital marketing, or for example, full time, or web design, or something? Why this sort of environment?
Oh, I guess I've thought quite deeply about this, and I had a computer at 5 years old, so I was pretty fortunate. Dad owned a computer shop when we were growing up, so we always had computers lying around. He was self-taught as well, so he basically picked it up and learned how to do programming, and he's quite capable. He actually ended up going back to uni and doing internet communications at uni, his post-grad and e-learning. But he was largely self-taught for most of his life around technology, so it was always floating around. I did it at school. I got ducks in IT, vet IT at school, and I got ducks in software development as well. So I was naturally really good at it compared to some of the other subjects I didn't do as well at. So I suppose it makes a lot of sense, but I drifted away from it thinking, I don't know if I really want to be a tech head and hang out in a dungeon all day. And that's sort of my picture of IT back when I started doing it. And you know, there was no real cloud back then. Like, I learnt Novell. So for those guys who have to remember that. So, like, I didn't think IT was for someone like me. I'm very much the entrepreneur type. So, but as the cloud come through, I was doing marketing. It was really digital transformation was in marketing at that point. Marketing was changing from broadcast mediums to interactive mediums and conversation mediums. So we're really excited about that. Marketing's essentially transformed now, and now we're starting to see the transformation of workplace, which is going from a very top-down, the managers make the best decisions, to a realization that actually some of the best decisions are made at the bottom. So how do we bring in that best information up so the managers at the top can actually make the best decision and delegate down properly and just collaborate and work better? So when Microsoft 365 came along, I was like, you know, we love the Google stack, but Google's a marketing company. They don't really understand, you know, business. They understand how to sell marketing really well, but it's just a really different paradigm over there. So, and then I just saw Microsoft and it's like, oh, okay, well, and Nadella, I've never seen a CEO with, you know, I talk about Steve Jobs a lot, but yeah, Nadella's vision and the way that he's going about transforming Microsoft in such a short amount of time into, you know, a very agile, big corporation, if that's even a thing, I was just really amazed with. So I've jumped on board with Office 365. I didn't find it very easy into the Google partnership program. Like, I was an AdWords partner, so I was already in the marketing program, but I wasn't in the productivity suite program. So that's sort of where we ended up. We ended up being Office 365 partners, and then the whole ecosystem around it and all the people that you meet, yourself included, Robert, it's such a great community to be involved in IT, I think, and that's what keeps me in it.
Cool. All right. Well, just a warning that for our listeners, we're also deciding to start a new drinking game here on the podcast. So every time somebody mentions the word digital transformation, you need to go in and take a swig of your favorite beverage, because I'm sure there'll be a lot of those terms used along the way. I think that, again, it's very interesting to, I suppose query Brenton a bit about, you've talked about the changes, like, you know, Satya's brought such changes to Microsoft. Microsoft's obviously moved from a BPOS to an Office 365, now to an Azure, to an environment now that is growing, you know, so quickly and encompassing and working for so many businesses. More and more people are jumping on board and using it. How are you finding it, you know, with customer take up? I mean, you know, what sort of approaches are you taking when it comes to speaking to customers, getting to adopt the product, getting to understand the product? I mean, what's your I suppose secret sauce, or things that you do a bit differently than, say, the average reseller who's come from maybe a potentially a hardware style small business server background? I mean, what differences do you bring to the game that give you that competitive edge, do you believe?
Yeah, look, I've tried a lot of different approaches with customers. The ones that work really well with my customers is I go in and I sell the vision, I explain the landscape at a very, very high level. So, you know, I have a conversation about, you know, yeah, we've got Google Apps now and it's a rock solid product and, you know, lots of big companies use it. But let's have a look at what's been happening with Google. Google's probably the best marketing company in the world. It's up there with Facebook. You know, they basically just single-handedly disrupted the whole marketing industry. That's what they do better than anybody. So let's have a look at that. And then they've built Google Apps because they needed something to collaborate with internally, and it works really well for them, but it's a whole bunch of engineers building stuff for them. Let's have a look at how Microsoft's gone about building their products. Their products are mainly for enterprise. So what do you get when you build lots of really important enterprise products? I said, yeah, lots of security. You know, they're trying to sell to banks. They're trying to sell the biggest companies in the world. what's their number one thing on their list? Security. So if you can do security better than Microsoft, then maybe you should go and get a job at Microsoft, because that's what people do. And we have a chat about, you know, most people are worried about security when we're talking cloud. So I go, like, Microsoft spends $1 billion a year on security. And Microsoft spends more on security than entire, you know, security vendors turn over in a year. Like, this is the sort of scale we're getting to with these big companies. And you might not like that, but they have the resources to actually provide the best solutions. And because they can manage it and take care of it all, they can keep it simple for you. And then that's usually the next piece of the puzzle that, you know, I'll then talk about. You know, back in the day, yes, it was simple in the sense you had a box, but let's have a look at something like business continuity. And we walk through business continuity and downtime, the cost of downtime. And, you know, I said, like, you probably don't realize this, but here's all the stuff your IT person has to do just to keep on top of it, just to keep on security. Here's how patching works. Here's how. And they're just like, holy, how does anyone run a business like that? And I said, I don't know. I'm a born in the cloud MSP. We don't worry about that stuff. We do such. You know, we leverage what Microsoft makes, put our layer over the top of it to make it even better, rather than try and reinvent the whole wheel. So going in with that approach, I suppose it'd be a little bit different if you're a traditional seller, because you're trying to say, well, we used to do it this way, now we do it this way, it's much better, we pay monthly, it's a little bit of a different model, you don't own anything in the sense, and you're putting a lot more trust in these vendors. So this is a different thing, but then you've already got a real head start as well, because you've already got the customer relationship. So that's, you know, if I'm talking about objections, the number one thing we run into is, my guy says cloud is no good for me. That's for other companies, and I'll go, okay. But the thing is that everyone's going to need some form of cloud. It's just your cloud's going to look different to everyone else's cloud. It's not if or when, or it's really when now, you know. But if they have an IT guy and he's really anti-cloud, it takes so much energy. It takes like 15 of their closest friends telling them you got to move. And that's the biggest challenge we have, that it doesn't matter how many of the facts we've got on our side, how good we are at what we do. Like, we got about 20 or 30 reviews online. That's another thing we use a lot. We put a lot of happiness reviews. Everyone's a 4 and 5 star. In fact, we like the 4 stars because it gives us something to improve on. And we just hand that to them and say, look how great we are. You know why we're great? Because we don't have all the problems that other people have. And it's not because we're super great. It's because we pick really good products and we deliver it well. And we don't have to worry about a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's the approach we've taken that's worked really well. And and I suppose tips for other people going out there, it's just having that bigger picture conversation with your customer about, you know, what's your business look like in 5 years? If we stopped having to worry about this, all this complicated stuff, what could we do with that time? What's the opportunity cost? Love to talk to you about digital signatures in the cloud. Love to talk to you about this, electronic signatures, all of that sort of stuff. You can have all those conversations that you couldn't have otherwise. So really it becomes a consulting business, not an engineering business in the same way.
All right. So again, lots of information there, but let's boil it down and let's put you on the spot here. What do you think is the killer app for Office 365? Obviously got a wide range of services to pick from here, lots and lots of options, but in your experience, what's the one that really excites the customer, gets them across the line, gets them to go, gee whiz, or wow, I've never seen that, or I didn't know this was possible? You know, can you boil it down to a single tool that you think really wins the game in Office 365 with people?
I think the traditional Exchange email in the cloud has been the killer app for Office 365. But then, you know, Google has an alternative, but they don't have anything that is Exchange like Office 365 does. And yes, you can buy other things, but that's really been the one killer app that's really cut through, and that's made it easy for everybody to onboard everyone to Office 365. But the problem is the customers only get like 1% of the value. I think the next killer app that's going to come through that people should keep a really good eye on is Teams. So I think SharePoint, particularly in compliance-driven environments, is another one of those killer apps because there's not much out there that really compares to that. But if we're talking about, say, a smaller business or a business that has small teams that need to collaborate to each other, trying to use all the Office 365 productivity apps, it's not for everybody. Some people like Trello. Yes, there's Planner in Office 365, but they like Trello. If they're trying to work with external parties, it's really hard in Office 365. Having teams to pull it all together, pull in Dropbox, pull in, you know, all of this stuff together, if we can get more customers onto that and get them using it and actually get them to do the cultural change behind it, that will be a really sticky killer app, in my opinion. But it's not as simple as Exchange, turn it on. It's an actual digital transformation, drink the Kool-Aid. It's a whole digital transformation that has to happen on the business side. The actual technical details aren't that complicated.
Well, you better be careful on that digital transformation word. Oops, said it again. That's three or four drinks that we've had people sculling. So I'm sure we've made a lot of people happy with our current drinking game. So with that in mind, why don't we do some news? So again, I'll take the lead with this. And again, if Brenton's got anything extra, please feel free to throw it in. But I've got the majority of the news in front of me. So let's start off with this. So one of the things that Office 365 has is something called Groups. Now, Groups is a foundational building block, I suppose, that Teams is built on. It aggregates a lot of services together, but Microsoft is, I suppose, moving this more into the background when it comes to Office 365. So one of the things here is that the group app for Outlook is being retired. So if you didn't know, there was an app you could get on your devices that allowed you to work with Office 365 Groups, which sort of came before Teams. So they are retiring that, and again, the move I think is basically to not publicize or push Groups to the fore. They're going to be the foundation underneath the covers of a lot of this sort of stuff, and again, that we should see sort of fade into the background, I suppose, and that is probably the first step in that process, is retiring these older apps. So the group side of thing in Office 365, Brenton, is that something you use regularly, or do you have to explain it to customers, or how do you sort of, where do you sort of sit on the Office 365 group side of things?
Traditionally, I've found the groups to be difficult for the customer to understand. So one of the things groups did, I don't know if it still does that, because I've been a bit scared to sort of fire them up again. It runs around, it creates a SharePoint site, it sets up all of this stuff in Office 365, all these different things without the user having to do anything, which is a great feature in the sense that, okay, we have a strategy and we're going to use all these products and that they're all there and they're ready to go, but it's also overwhelming to the customers as well. We like to work with a lot of lawyers, financial planners. They're very, very intelligent people, quite high IQs, but when it comes to technology, they have the same sort of reservations and fears around it that all customers generally have. So if something runs off and does a whole bunch of that sort of stuff, it's a bit scary. So it does take a little bit more hand-holding once, you know, so really don't know what it's all about. But I think the actual concept of groups, tying it all together, I think that's really, really important.
Cool. All right, so another major bit of news, I suppose, that would affect a lot of people is the update we've seen for Microsoft Teams. So if you haven't seen it, one of the things that you've now got is an updated client. So again, if you do have Teams on the Teams app on your desktop, make sure that you restart that to get the latest update from that. Now, you'll find that when you do that, the search bar has moved to the middle, and basically we can now do cool things like running slash commands, which allow us to, for example, get more information about those people on our network. We've also got better integration with OneNote. So one of the things I've got is a team for my community, the patrons, and I have a shared OneNote with them, which has information on Office 365 and Azure. Now, that started off in my OneDrive, so I could get to it quite easily on my mobile device, but now, thanks to the update in Teams, I can share that same notebook with those individuals and embedded effectively inside the Microsoft team. So that, again, adds value without having to have those people pop out of Teams and open OneNote. So again, it's moving everything into that one interface, which is really handy. So we've also seen, again, personal views of your app. So as you use apps, you've got a better choice here. So lots and lots of updates around Teams that came in January. Make sure that you do have a look, and we will put the link in the show notes. And you're saying that one of the big things for you, Brenton, is you're getting a lot of uptake, a lot of interest in Teams with your customers?
Yeah, look, once I understand it, they can't live without it. So one of the big things we were pushing before Planner was Trello, and really helping customers adopt Kanban philosophy. So if anyone's interested in learning how to do workflow, Kanban, Toyota Production System, just incredible way of organizing and running workflow, particularly even personal workflow. And yeah, we were showing them how to do it, you know, only do one or two things at a time, don't do 40 things at a time, all of that, just 101 stuff, explaining bottlenecks, and then putting it into practice with Trello cards. Having Teams as the next extension of that, once they've understood that concept, and then they can click it into Teams, and then you go, okay, well, let's have a conversation when it's appropriate to have a chat with somebody, and when it's appropriate to email, and when it's appropriate to, you know, because what you don't want is, yes, okay, I need to get out of email, we're going to get Teams, we're going to get out of email, we're going to stop all that nonsense, and then they get into Teams and it's 10 times worse because people are expecting the instant response because of the chat-based nature of it. It's once you get that cultural change right and people get used to it and comfortable with it, they can't live without it. Like, it's just an amazing transformation.
Say that word again. Digital transformation. Another drink for everybody. Yeah.
It's an amazing transformation. They really do appreciate, not having one channel called email that just absolutely murders their productivity and murders their day, and they get 4 hours through email and then they've got to start work, you know?
Well, I think the other thing too is with these chat-based products like Teams, like Yammer, the big thing is people are working in public. The big advantage of people working in public is the fact that it's all now searchable. So if I come in as a party that wasn't involved in the conversation, I can find this, discover this. It can be presented to me by the Office Graph, so I can discover this information, which is not really something you can do if it's locked away in your email and I'm not included in that conversation. So one of the changes, digital transformation, that's happening is the fact that, again, working in public, sharing information means that a lot of the information that is in your inbox, you probably don't need to keep it just to yourself. It does have value to other people, so sharing it on Teams, in Yammer, in groups is a great way to do that. One of the big benefits and the integration that Office 365 provides will make that easier for users. So another piece of update news on the SharePoint side is we have a number of additional web parts coming to SharePoint. So web parts are basically widgets that you can embed on a SharePoint page. You can embed text, you can embed images, again, links, videos, but they've now added a few new ones. They've got the ability to embed Planner, Twitter feed. So if you need to follow a Twitter feed, you can do that. You can also do Kindle. So it's got a part web part now for Kindle. You can also get updated options for Power BI and a number of others. Now, speaking of Planner, I think Planner again is a bit of an underused app, I suppose, in the Office 365 suite. Embedding it into SharePoint is hopefully going to make it more consumable for people. But one of the updates that they gave us with Planner that has really, really made my day is the fact that we've now got a calendar view in our Planner. Now, before we could look at them in buckets, basically. Now, made it a bit difficult when we had to work out to-do lists, when were deadlines available. So the good thing now is that Planner has something called a schedule view. And again, we'll put the link in the show notes that you can read all about this. But basically, if you go to your Planner, you look across the top, you should see board charts, and there should be a new one there, hopefully shortly, if it's not there, called Schedule. And that will basically show you a calendar view of when the tasks are available. So I think that's going to be really handy, and it's something that a lot of people have asked for. And hopefully we'll see more uptake of the planner, given how well now that it's integrated with some of these things like Microsoft Teams. So you were saying that Planner is a big use for your customers, or are you finding that as something that they're using quite regularly, Brenton?
Yeah, it's one we always educate customers about. So we want to do a lot more about explaining the benefits of it. I read about 3 or 4 books on Lean last year because, you know, it's a big part of digital transformation is Lean philosophies and how they all click in really nicely in Agile and DevOps, etc. We were very interested about, it's often as technology people, we make things so complicated. We try and automate things, they become more complicated. We build even, you know, edge use cases into workflow and stuff like that. And what actually works for humans is we can keep like 7 things in our head at all times. So the simpler we can make it, the better, and the better your uptake is. If it's too complicated, people throw their hands up in the air and they walk away. So by putting in something like Planner for a customer, you can say, all right, I'm going to set up your sales pipe. You know, you don't have use for a CRM. Yes, I know it comes with Business Premium now, but I'm not really across it. So, but maybe there's some good use in there. But let's say, let's set up a basic CRM. When an inquiry comes in the website or someone calls you, I want you to put them in this list. And then once you've sent them an email and followed up from their phone, you know, you've called them, followed up, put them into this list. And they're physically dragging the cards. For those who haven't seen Trello, it's just like a big pin board. You physically drag the cards through the list and they get their sense of accomplishment as they do it. But they can also look at it and go, you know, how much money am I going to make in the next 3 to 6 months? They don't need a sophisticated information system in some cases. Sometimes they do, depends on the size of the company. But if we're talking about, say, sub 20 seats, you've got a couple of people trying to manage a sales pipeline, really, really easy scenario. You can just go in there, put it all into Planner, and then they'll start their heads clicking over, like, what else can I do this thing? What else can I do? So. Well, that's one thing, to-do lists, and another thing that I, you know, try and educate people, like doing, done, in progress, park, 4 lists. I said if it's in the doing, keep only 2 things in that list. If you can't do anything with that, park them, bring them back, and then just pull from the parks until they're emptied, and then pull from the, yeah. And like people just go, oh, this is amazing, this is revolutionary, because they spend half their life trying to figure out what's the most important thing to do. You know, go prioritize once and then just go through the list and reprioritize as you need. And you know, it's not rocket science, but once you know it, it's amazing.
Yeah, once you start creating lists, it becomes a bit of a habit, and then you've got to remember that the idea is to eliminate the lists and get everything off it, which can be a challenge. For many people, as you say. So that's part of the discipline. You create a list, all great, but you need to cross stuff off. So, all right, so that's Office 365. How's your Azure, Brenton? I mean, that's why I brought you on to replace Mark. No, should I?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I'm not quite Mark level. Sure, I know it exists.
What about this PowerShell stuff that Mark's always so into? I'm sure you could rattle off the same commandlets he was doing, or maybe what I should do is perhaps just ease you into it. So that's your homework for today, to make sure that you go away and actually know how Azure works and how we can spell it. So firstly, Microsoft has reported that Azure revenue has nearly doubled in its second quarter of 2018. So again, according to one of the business magazines, vendor magazine, CRN, this marks about the 10th straight quarter that Azure revenue grew at 90% or more, right, on a year-on-year basis. So again, we're seeing effectively every quarter, which is probably month by month, that Azure revenue is basically doubling month by month. So this is an indication of how much stuff is being used, how much stuff is being moved into there. So you're getting infrastructure in there, you're getting applications in there, you're getting other resources. More and more people, more and more businesses are using this and indicating that the on-prem is just becoming not something they're focused on, and they're looking to get computing as a utility. Azure also gives you the benefit of being able to deploy a lot of this directly via software. So that's another reason for, I think, the move and the tipping point and more things going into Azure. Now, one of the big things for me that Azure announced recently is that they do have this thing called a Cloud Shell. Now, one of the major ways that you manipulate or you work with Azure and Office 365 is through PowerShell, a scripting language. Now, basically, that requires you to connect to the tenant or connect to the resources, and that can be a little bit cumbersome, loading modules, blah, 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 blah. But now Azure has got something called an Azure Cloud Shell, which you could get to from a button on the Azure portal, but now we have a direct link. So if you go to shell.azure.com and then enter your details, it will open basically a PowerShell commandlet inside that browser session and connect directly to your Azure environment, allow you to run scripts and commands against that environment. So it makes it a lot easier to manage and work with Azure. So again, if you're a bit of a PowerShell user, again, you should be, I think, if you're an IT pro, then have a look at the Azure Cloud Shell. Have you done any work with Azure at all, Brenton?
Not a great deal. We've done a little bit in Amazon, just because that's where we used to be. But I'm not really, across Azure. As I said, I've worked mainly with the small business space, so I like to work in that 20.
They all use Azure, my friend. They all use Azure. Well, look, I'll tell you what. What you can do is you can go back and you can listen to all the previous episodes starred Mark, and I'm sure that you'll come back and be able to answer all our questions when we come back for the next episode. So in the Azure world, probably one of the biggest stumbling blocks to actually moving many people's infrastructure to the cloud is around printing, right? So printing, unfortunately, is something that seems to be very much still locked in the on-prem world. Well, we have an article here, which again, we'll put in the show notes, which talks about hybrid printing with Azure AD. So again, remember that Azure AD is the identity management tool here that will do Office 365 users. We can connect that to on-prem. And again, we've got an article here that shows you how to perhaps manage that a bit better when you've got to work with printers on-prem. Now, again, typically many businesses, even small businesses, will need to work in a hybrid environment for a period of time before they move totally to the cloud. One of the things probably that's going to determine how long they stay on-prem is the printing. And again, Azure hopefully is going to come up with a bit of a solution for us, minimize our on-prem environment so that we can still do our printers, our printer queues and those sort of things. But I think printing is probably one of the biggest challenges. Is that a fair statement in your experience? Well, how do you handle printers in a totally cloud-based world?
Well, you've got a couple of options. I might have to say the terrible G word again, but Google Cloud Print actually allows you to print anywhere in the world over the internet. So we've got this problem at the moment that we're on an air-gapped network, so that's a good cloud scenario. I'm in a co-working space here, so there's not that many people in the co-working space, and it's not really justifiable to go buy a big enterprise printer to put in the room. So we're actually co-tenanted with a company that's about 30 million turnover, so they do have nice printers there. So we're like, oh, how do we connect to their printer without actually, connecting to their network? Because they don't really want us connecting to their network. So what we've ended up doing is we've just gone and bought a seller on NUC type thing. We're going to set it up. We haven't quite set it up yet. We're going to set up Google Cloud Print, connect Google Cloud Print to their printer, and and then print through Google Cloud Print. I'm not sure how well it'll scale out and how much control we're going to have with it. I'm going to have a bit of a play with it, but we're very much looking at, can we fill in some of these gaps with other vendor solutions? Because Microsoft is always going to be our core business, and that's what we're about. But sometimes some of these other vendors have come out with this sort of clever ways of getting around it. A lot of the printers actually support Google Cloud Print. You can click it in to follow me print or and paper cut and all of that sort of thing. So there's already some really cool stuff out there, and sometimes you just can't afford to wait for Microsoft to catch up in some of the areas. Sometimes it leads, sometimes it's behind, sometimes it's on par. And you just got to put together a chocolate cake to make it work for the customer.
I think, again, it is something, and I will agree with you, that Microsoft, I think, has tended to overlook a little bit here is the how to manage the printing. I mean, their solution probably is an on-prem server in a standard way with a hybrid environment. I think it would be nice to have some sort of option that would do the cloud print. They certainly have the resources to do it. It would be nice to be able to somehow configure an agent or something to back to Azure, and then you could then print to it somehow. So again, I think it's something that Microsoft, we'd like to, especially in the SMB, we know that we live in a paperless office and there's no such thing as paper anymore, don't we, after all these years. But unfortunately in SMBs, especially, paper is still the preferred option, and having the ability to print via the cloud would be fantastic. And again, it's something that I think that Microsoft, I'd like to see Microsoft come up with some sort of easy solution like Google has. Again, but as you say, you can mix and match generally. If they work, they will generally integrate together. It's just a matter of understanding them. But at this stage, yeah, I think that one of the biggest limitations from the Microsoft side is this ability to do cloud printing. Hopefully Microsoft's got something under wraps that they will bring out for us and let us have access to. But in the meantime, there are options, as Brenton indicates there, from other providers. Basically, so the last thing I've got here in the Azure world, we don't want to go on too much about it. But again, what we've got here is that one of the technologies that Azure have that is super cool is the ability to do site recovery. So that's basically the ability to take a hypervised machine running in Azure or on-prem and basically replicate that to another location. Now, again, that means replicating the information on the disk, the virtual machine, so that if the primary site fails, the backup site will spin up and take over that automatically. Now, normally the way that it has worked in Azure is we've had to use the disks, and we've had to manage those. Now, for a while now, probably 12, maybe 18 months now, Microsoft has had something called managed disks, where again, they're moving the need to manage, look after, load balance, redundancy of your disks in Azure. They've moved that to an area where they do it for you, and now Site Recovery is able to support managed disks. So if you're going down the path of offloading more of the work around your infrastructure to Microsoft, then again, have a look at this item we'll put in the show notes about protecting machines using managed disks when you're using Azure Site Recovery. Now, lots and lots of still additional news in there, stuff around Azure and Office 365. Again, we want to keep this a little bit short and sweet. We don't want to wear Brenton out too much, I think, on the first episode. We want to get the feedback in before we continue on. Now, we did have an idea here maybe of talking about some business books, but I think what we might do, given that we've managed to digitally transform ourselves for close on 40 minutes here, we might look to round it off for this episode and push the discussion around business books, I think, to the next episode, because then we've got something in the bag to talk about. We've talked up the news, we've brought people up to date. So I think if you're happy with that, Brent, we might look at tying it up here and pushing that discussion off to the next podcast. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon that'll be great. And that'll give me a bit more time to think about what I'm going to talk about.
You mean you've come to my podcast unprepared?
No, I was prepared. I'm just going to be more prepared because next week. You know?
Excellent. That's a very good answer. You seem to be able to cope with my directions far better than somebody else who's no longer on this podcast.
Yes.
So yeah, there's a warning for those who think that they would like to come on as a co-host. Now, as we round,
worried.
That's all right. You've survived to see, you know, produce the episode. I'm sure everybody will want to give feedback and sympathy to you. So why don't you let the ladies and gentlemen of the audience, boys and girls, know how they can get in contact with you, where they can look at your business and get more information about who you are.
Yep. So it's really simple. BrentonJohnson.com. You can Google me, I'll come up, and my business is uptakedigital.com.au. So yeah, that's why I loved it every time you said uptake today. I reckon you said about four times.
Excellent. Yeah.
Add that to the beers, most, I reckon.
I'm a bit disappointed that you didn't use the B word when you talked about search engines, but we will discipline you and make sure that you remember to use the B word when we talk about search engines going forward as well, or keeping it anonymous, right? So we must remember that. So for those of you who want to get in contact with me, my Twitter handle is @DirectorCIA. And again, I would suggest that the best place to keep up to date with information on this podcast is at N2K Podcast on Twitter, also on Facebook. You can use the old world emails to reach us, feedback@needtoknow.cloud. Again, we'll make sure that the show notes go up there. I post it on the blog and we tweet it out. I'm sure Brenton will also replicate it out to his network, which should hopefully reach a larger audience than we've had before. But I think for a first episode, I think we've all done well. We've managed to keep the ball rolling. We've talked about Office 365, Azure, a bit of Google, and we've mentioned the digital transformation word as many times as we have been able to. So hopefully everybody's quite drunk or quite happy by this stage. So what do you reckon, Brenton? I think that's probably a good place to wrap up for this episode.
Perfect. Thanks for that, Robert.
All right. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you on the next Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.